Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Dr. Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California, and your brain masseur. Get ready for a very special treat. Each year, the Lighthouse Baptist Church sponsors the Lights On Banquet, an evening with the brain masseur. This year, our special guest was California Assemblyman Jim Patterson, representing the 23rd District of the beautiful state of California. God knows we need men like Jim Patterson in government, especially here in California, and I'm glad he's there. A God-fearing patriot indeed, providing much-needed salt and light in a very dark place there in Sacramento. His speech will encourage and inspire you. Without further ado, California Assemblyman Jim Patterson.
First of all, it's a delight to be here. Thank you for the invitation. It means a lot. It is an encouragement to me to know that while I'm up in Sacramento feeling lost and alone, that there's a lot of you back here and back home who are praying for us and standing behind us and beside us when it really matters. First of all, I thought it was an interesting invitation to speak for Jerry the Brain Masseur. And I thought, now I'm an old radio guy, right? So I've owned and operated radio stations for 30 years. So it intrigued me that he was on the air. It intrigued me that he was the brain masseur, which I thought was a really nifty title. And I thought, why didn't I think of that? I could have used that for 30 years. And so I started to listen to the podcasts, and I'm just learning the lexicon of the brain masseur, so which is pretty cool. So I just wanted to say thank you for the invite. Thank you for what you do here. And thank all of you for helping him do what he does, because it is important that we have voices in the media that can clearly and with passion spell out what is at stake. I want to talk to you about the opportunity that we as Christians have in the public square, the principles by which we must be in the public square, and the challenges that we face together. And I want to start with the opportunity. Sometimes I don't think we fully appreciate the fact that we've been born into the United States of America with a constitution that was framed by our founders at a time when the sovereignty of nations rested with kings in Europe, czars in Russia, shoguns in Japan, emperors and empresses in Russia, czars in Russia. Think about the remarkable revolutionary notion of across the masthead of the Constitution, the contract with the people. The sovereignty of the nation was vested in we, the people. Think about the poetry of our liberty, the poetry of our opportunity in the Declaration of Independence, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among them are life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. We often stop there. Go on to the next phrase. Governments are instituted amongst men to preserve and protect those liberties. The federal government did not create itself. We the people did. We are the sovereigns. I contend that it is a Christian duty to steward our liberty as painstakingly and as prayerfully as we steward every other gift of God. We think it's important to steward our lives as husbands and wives and fathers and sons and daughters and family. We think it's important to steward our money, to steward the blessings that God has given to us through biblical principles, to steward our time and our talent, and to be faithful. I contend that we were given a terrific gift, that we can steward our citizenship every bit as much as we steward anything else. And forgive me if I step on a few toes, but it is not something that is optional here. It is a requirement if we are to be the full Christian in liberty and freedom with the blessings and the gifts that we have been given to sit silently in our pews and watch everything that is important slip away. It is not something that's optional. And I'm not a theologian. And so what I'm going to talk about when I reference the Bible a little bit is kind of an opinion and a point of view. I'll leave the theology to the reverends and the pastors, all right? But I want you to think about this. In the New Testament, how often were we reminded to pray for those in authority, right? To be good citizens, even at a time when that citizenship was in the Roman Empire, which was a despotic dictatorship. Imagine what that means today. We do not live in a dictatorship. We live in a constitutional republic in which we, the people, have the sovereignty. We are, in a sense, praying for ourselves. In a sense, we are being good citizens, one with another, because being good citizens is what is expected within the framework of our Constitution. And so, again, I don't think that it is optional for people of faith to think that they can separate on Sunday what goes on the rest of the 6 days. And to do so is to misunderstand, I think, the responsibilities that we have, and to, in many ways, instead of being the American eagle, we're being tempted to be an ostrich. This is a critical time for us in California and for the United States. So we have an opportunity here because of our Constitution, and we also have an opportunity because in the New Testament, people were told, be good citizens, pray for those in authority in the midst of a dictatorship. Imagine the freedom and opportunity we have to be fully Christian and fully an American citizen, fully doing our duty and stewarding our duty as a sovereign in the nation. This is the opportunity that we have. I think there are principles at stake as well that we need to take into the public square. It's one thing to say that ideas matter and that elections have consequences, but we better talk pretty clearly about what are the principles that we really believe in. If we do not have a governing lens, a governing set of principles, people like me get elected to go to places like Sacramento, and pretty soon they betray us all. And do you know why? Because they went there without a governing principle. They went there without an experience in real life to prepare them for the lies, the deceit, the trading of favors. If you think that going to Sacramento, after you go there for a little while, I come home thinking, you know, I need a morality car wash. I mean, I'm not making this up. 2 years ago, three members of the California Senate were indicted for fraud and convicted and sent to jail. And one, go Google Leland Yee, and you will find he was indicted and sent to prison for corruption. He was the leading hard left gun control crazy in Sacramento, and he was convicted of gun running. Look it up. There are principles at stake here. And there are reasons why we must gird ourselves with these principles if we're going to go to Sacramento or Washington, D.C., and not be tarnished, not be tempted, and not be turned in a different direction. Principles like this: liberty, freedom, personal responsibility, care for one another, a work ethic, a love for neighbor, an understanding that we're in this together, and that as we free ourselves, we free others to become the great people that God created individuals to be in the first place. It is about controlling government. It is not about growing government. It's about fighting back against those who would limit liberty. in order to open the door of liberty and freedom and what our founders called the blessings of liberty for themselves and for their posterity. That's you and me. They looked down the corridor of time and they saw us. And they created a way of governing that liberated them, took America through every ism in the world that wanted to try to destroy Americanism. And here we are 200 and some odd years later. We are the envy of the planet, and we stand at the crossroads to determine what will America be in the 21st century. We have got to hold to those principles. Because if we don't, there are a whole lot of other principles that will crowd in and get in the way. One, your liberty is only as far as the government will let you be free. Opportunity is not for all. Opportunity is granted and gifted by the rulers. There are winners and losers. There are people we play favorites for. Don't tax you, don't tax me, tax the one behind the tree. The absence of hard work, personal responsibility, faith, and education, studying, is generational and lifelong poverty and dependency. There are two pathways. One pathway is basically the humanist pathway. It is the evolutionary pathway, right? We're not images of God. We're not created in his image. We are merely the animal that warred its way to the top of the food chain, and sooner or later, we're going to war our way to the credo of the humanists. He who dies with the most toys wins. There is entirely a different pathway. It is the pathway that God has set out, that our founders set out. It is a pathway that Alexis de Tocqueville discovered when he was a French philosopher, came to the United States in the 1830s, went across the country trying to figure out the genius of the great American experience in liberty, and he came away with a book called On Democracy. Read it. It's, I think, next to the Bible. I think it demonstrates what America was and certainly can be again. He came away with a couple of notions about why America went through its experiment with liberty and did so successfully, and in such a short period of time. He came up to a conclusion, number one, that America was filled with essentially non-government organizations that were democratic, elected, and that these non-government organizations were the backbone of what made America great. What did he mean? The churches, the chambers of commerce, right? The PTA, right? And he also concluded that he went across America to find the genius of the American experiment, and he talked about self-help, the care for one another in times of trouble. And he utilized the burning down of a barn and everybody coming together and building that barn up, and they do it every time it got burnt down. And they come back again and again and again. And then finally he made a conclusion that part of the genius of America, and I'm quoting from the book now, that he found the pulpits of America aflame in righteousness. These are all governing principles. These are all personal principles. And these are all principles that work no matter where they're tried and no matter how often they are tried. These principles really matter. And then finally, the challenges that we face. And believe me, they are many. But in being prepared and being effective, I think we need to first of all take a page out of Paul's admonition to Timothy to be a good pastor. Study to show yourself a workman that doesn't need to be embarrassed, rightly dividing the word of truth. That's pretty good counsel for pastors, isn't it? Do you know that's pretty good counsel for a member of the California legislature? Jim, study to show yourself a workman that doesn't need to show up on the floor of the California legislature and be embarrassed, because you don't know the difference between a progressive and regressive tax, or you don't know the difference between a bond that requires full and payment and backing by the Treasury of the state of California and a bond that's a revenue-based bond that you have to find a revenue stream in order to pay the debt. You cannot go into that environment and merely go into that environment and claim the right, the divine right to rule. It doesn't work that way. Any more so than a pastor can walk into a church and claim the divine right to lead it and is not studied up, prayed up, a workman that doesn't need to be embarrassed, rightfully dividing that word of truth. That's good advice for a pastor. It's really good advice for people who want to be godly bankers, who want to be godly real estate folks, want to be godly legislators, want to be godly farmers. It's really good advice. Now we face challenges. And how are we going to overcome, and what do we need to know about the challenges that we face? Never in my lifetime have I ever been in a political environment in which more of the precious rights that we have lived by for a long, long time, that were embedded in our Constitution and in our Bill of Rights, are under the most severe attack now than in the state of California. And I see it every time I see new bills that come up. And I could stand here and tell you about all of the junk that, but you know about a lot of it. They're so brazen that they took, what was it, last year, might have been the year before, passed a law that said Christian-based private pregnancy care centers are now required to advertise in their publications and on the walls of their buildings, sacred life buildings, the government-required speech about where they can go to find a free state-funded abortion. That is a law. Now, there's hope. Just last week, state court found that law was egregiously unconstitutional. We're going to see the Supreme Court pick it up. And I think that with the Gorsuch nomination, something good may come out of this. And what will it be? It will be a slap down to this one-party rule that is demagogic, it is dictatorial, and it wants to do just about anything it can do to you if they can get enough votes and the governor will sign it. But there is a constitution that they have to deal with. They have overstepped their bounds. They have tread beyond where even the courts in California will allow them to step. And something good is going to come out of this because they are overreaching. And when dictators overreach, rebellion takes place. And a republic, that rebellion is at the ballot box. And I predict that the pendulums are going to start swinging in the state of California because these Democrats have way overreached. And it's about time that we call them on it. It is not good enough for us to merely mimic Democrats in Sacramento, to merely be Democrat-lite, to get along and go along. If we do not present a passionate, persuasive alternative to where the state of California is headed, then we do grave disservice to the memory of Ronald Reagan, which was Ronald Reagan's genius. He provided a passionate, conservative alternative to the malaise of President Carter, and he won in a landslide, and he changed history. So the challenges we face are that we are in a one-party rule. The challenges that we face, and I'm gonna try to explain this without becoming really theologically on dangerous grounds. This is my opinion. I think that we are in a time in which we must see ourselves as remnant leaders. We are outnumbered, and we're outgunned increasingly. What have we learned historically about remnant leaders? A couple of examples of remnant leaders, the Maccabees on top of Masada. I contend that was the beginning of the return to Israel of the homeland in 1948, collecting up the diaspora and bringing them back to the Holy Land. It's had to start somewhere where somebody put a stake in the ground and said, we are not going to take this anymore, and we are going to stand even though we're outnumbered, and we're going to stand even though it costs us everything. And if you go to Jerusalem today, if you want to bring home a nifty souvenir to a friend of yours that might be in the Air National Guard, bring them home a poster that when I traveled there last, I brought home to the 144th Air Wing over in Fresno. It is an aerial photograph shot down through a formation of F-16s with Masada underneath. And the caption is, never again. Remnant leadership did something remarkable that has informed and infused the strength of Israel to this very day. I contend to you, we are in a place and a time where we need to have remnant leadership. We're going to have to admit that we're outnumbered. We're going to have to admit that the pendulum may be slow in swinging, but we cannot give up simply because the deck is stacked against us. History demonstrates that those who give up disappear. Another example, the disciples. Jesus is crucified. They're running away. Talk about being outnumbered. Talk about remnant. Well, then the resurrection happened. What happened? That remnant leadership rose up. And my goodness, they changed the world. But I want to warn us about something. Remnant leadership must learn the lessons of history. And remnant leadership must be united, but not necessarily uniform. The church must be united and stop allowing its political clout in many ways to be reduced or in somehow fractured because one denomination has a different theology than another denomination, and we lose the unity because we're worried about the uniformity. Do you think there were some arguments on the top of Masada about what to do? You think they were all uniform in the decision? I don't think so. But they were united in the cause. We want liberty, we want freedom, we want the Romans out of here. Okay? Do you think that the early disciples had a little bit of, I mean, they had unity, but were they uniform? Didn't Peter and Paul have a little bit of an argument? Okay? But they were unified. We cannot let a search for perfection and uniformity to get in the way of unity, because it is strength in numbers that scares the dictators to death. And the more numbers we have and the more people that we show up in Sacramento, the more we crowd their phone lines, the more we send them emails, the more we make a nuisance of ourselves in large numbers, the more afraid they are of the great outnumbered folks out there, and they will start to act differently. We have been able to kill several awful, horrible bills. And in fact, we saw one that was so bad that even the governor vetoed it. Right? I mean, this was going to say that your association rights, your privacy rights, your freedom of speech rights, if you were in a church or in some kind of a Christian organization or some kind of a Christian nonprofit and you had certain behavioral guidelines that you expected, that you had a point of view about what family meant, that you had a point of view about what life signified and how important life was, or if you had a point of view that said that we think that there are certain sexual associations and notions of marriage and sexual responsibility that we think is biblical and part of what's in our heart, in our soul. State of California wanted to make that essentially illegal. It was so bad that the governor vetoed. Even the governor saw. Now, do you think it might have had something to do that back in the earlier days he had a little bit of seminary training as a Jesuit? I maybe giving him too much credit. You know in his veto message what he said? This isn't necessary. There are anti-discrimination laws in the state of California, and they rightfully exempt people of strong religious faith. We're already protected, and he wasn't going to allow that protection to be compromised. And so we have to be understanding of the challenges. We have to be willing to stay in the fight, even when it looks like we're just outnumbered, because sooner or later the pendulums swing. Winston Churchill in the 1930s was held up to ridicule because he said the Nazis were evil. He was right, they were wrong, and the history books changed. I mean, the pendulum swung. Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, Pope John Paul II stood up and said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And the wall came down. History was changed. And the professional politicians and the people in the State Department said to Mr. Reagan, don't use that line. And he did. That's leadership. And the wall came down. What about Lech Walesa? Alone in Poland, who stood and almost single-handedly with the help of Solidarity, stood up to essentially the Red Army and the communist power. Look at Poland today. It is a democracy. It is flourishing economically. And it has remarkably, so has the old Czechoslovakia. I mean, there's a lot of great stories about what happened after the fall of the Iron Curtain, not so much in Russia. The biggest concern I think we have is the reconstitution of the Russian Empire. and all that that's going to mean. And I think the biggest national international challenge we have is going to be the real significant threat that a communist China with a blue water navy significantly challenges American sea lanes and the ability for the Pacific Fleet to actually be in the Pacific. These are serious matters that require the kind of leadership that has learned of the opportunity, learned of the principles that have worked down through the corridor. That's what it is to be a conservative. Conservatives have looked down the corridor of time. We've noticed things that are true, of good report, just, righteous, and they have worked. We want to conserve them. That's why we're conservatives. And because we know that they work yesterday, we have full confidence that they will work tomorrow. That's why the founder said that we are establishing the blessings of liberty for ourselves and for our posterity. They knew these principles worked. And I'm going to close with this. This is going to date me, but some time ago, I was leafing through an old copy of Time magazine. Does anybody read Time magazine anymore? If they do, you're reading it online. But I was leafing through. This is probably 30 years ago. And this has stuck with me my whole life. On the cover was a picture of a young man, Christian man, who was the leader of the Chicago area navigators on the campuses of the universities there. He had a boatload of young men that he was mentoring in the Christian faith and through navigators, and he was out on Lake Michigan. The boat flipped over. They were thrown in the water. He spent almost all of his energy lifting those kids from the water to the safety of the boat, and then when the rescue boat came, he kept lifting those kids up to the rescuers, and he eventually lost strength and died, drowned. The cover caption of that Time magazine was, "He was always lifting somebody up." I think that's our calling. When we lift people to liberty, we are lifting them up. When we lift people to personal accountability, we are lifting them up. When we are lifting them from ignorance to being educated and prepared, a workman that doesn't need to be embarrassed but can be effective, we are lifting them up. When we are lifting them toward family responsibility, motherhood, fatherhood, loving our kids, expecting great things from them, and sacrificing so that they can get there, we are always lifting somebody up. These principles are not only historic changes politically, but these ideas change the very direction of individual human beings from desperation and dependence to opportunity and freedom, liberty, and independence. How many stories do we need to hear of the individuals who have been set free, lifted up by Christian witness and Christian ministry, and become great when in fact they broke the chains of a history of dependency and disaster? Think about it. The testimonies are rife. We know of so many. Many are in our immediate sphere of influence and in our families. I want to encourage you to continue to support Jerry, because he's always lifting somebody up. I want to encourage you in your own life, in your work, to always lift somebody up. That there is not a disconnect between lifting people up politically and lifting people up socially and economically, because they all come basically from the same source. And I believe that is the enlightenment of the Holy Spirit. And I believe that is the important teaching and training that is in cover to cover in the Bible. Doesn't the Bible teach personal responsibility, accountability? Doesn't it preach love? Doesn't it preach the importance of being an entrepreneur? I point you to the parable of the talents, right? I said, "Master, I went out and I tore the barns down. I invested. All the others, you know, hid or somehow were afraid. And somebody took a risk." And the master said, "I'm going to bless you with a whole lot more." right? Is that not the American dream in parable form? And so there's a lot of good sociology. There's a lot of good politics. There's a lot of good family counseling. There's a lot of good financial advice in the Word of God and in the principles that we believe and understand. And we conservatives try to infuse those into the manner in which we organize our economy and we organize our rules and laws. The Democrats are going to do it 180 degrees different. They're going to reward dependency. They're going to penalize independency. They are going to want to enslave people to a political, for lack of a better word, political, I was going to say concentration camp. That might be a little bit, maybe a plantation. I mean, think about it. The Democrats say they care about people who are poor and who are downtrodden and who are in misery, and yet they do everything they can possibly do to make their schools more rotten, their lives more difficult, climbing out of poverty next to impossible, and then the only answer they have to the misery that they contribute to their lives is to say, but wait a minute, we've got a welfare check for you, right? We got a welfare check. That's like saying we got a slave cabin for you down the road. And I'm serious about this. Free people in a free society, in a free country, in a free economy have every right to soar. And when they soar and are succeeding, the government has no right to penalize, cripple them, and take from them the fruits of their labor and their hard work. Look what the government of California is doing today. The highest poverty rate in the nation. We have the highest cost of living in the nation. We have some of the slowest economic mobility in the nation. What is economic mobility? It's basically the measure of how quick and how rapidly people from poverty get into the middle class above and beyond. It's called economic freedom or economic mobility. Some of the slowest in the nation. If you're in San Francisco, you're probably doing okay. In Silicon Valley, you're probably doing okay. You know, if you're the coastal area, pretty doing okay. Most places, right? You go 5 miles inland, the rest of the state of California is living with double-digit unemployment. I am so sick and tired of the Democrats saying, look at the unemployment rate. It's 6%. Woo! They're lying to you. That is the U1 unemployment rate. There's what's called the U6 unemployment rate. That's the unemployment rate that calculates those who are unemployed and are looking for work. But it also calculates those who are working 2 and 3 part-time jobs, desperately seeking full-time jobs, and can't find it. And it is those who have just plain given up because they can't find the work. Do you know what? The next time you see the government say California's unemployment rate is 5.5%, multiply times 2.5, and you'll get the U6 unemployment rate. Okay? And if you think I'm exaggerating, go look up U6 unemployment rate. You're going to have to go through the U.S. government department of something or other, labor statistics or something, and just go find out what the U6 unemployment rate is in the state of California. They don't break it down by county. They should. They break it down by state, and it's about 2.5 times the unemployment rate. 2.5 times. So, look, I believe that the Democrats have sold a lie for so long that they believe it, and that they've tried to sell it so long to their constituents that their constituents started to believe it, and now there is an undercurrent of second guessing, second thoughts about what is it that I've been voting for all this time. And I think that there is a reason why I'm optimistic. Fresno is a Democrat city. I was the first Republican mayor elected to that Democrat city in 1993. There hasn't been a Democrat elected since. We can win in Democrat cities. We can win in Democrat strongholds. I come from an area where Senator Andy Vidak represents us with sterling credentials. And I think it's a 19-point Democrat seat. Explain that. Passionate, persuasive alternatives to the status quo, wrapping the Democrats around the failures of what they have done time after time, pointing out the obvious, and then pivoting to the positive, aspirational alternative that conservatism can create. There is a place for another Reagan. There's another place for a Margaret Thatcher. There's another place for a Winston Churchill. There's another place for Lech Walesa. There's another place for John Paul II. Don't despair, although we are in the middle of the desert. It's Friday, but Sunday's coming. It's Friday, but Sunday's coming. We may feel like we are alone. We may feel like the Roman with their spears and swords are out to get us in the dead of night. You're a follower of his. Well, that was Friday, but Sunday's coming. And Sunday's here. So let's go out in the power of that knowledge. Let's go out in the power of the Holy Spirit. Let's go out in the power that knowing our ideas really do matter, because they've mattered down through the course of centuries and the history of this country. And let's not give up, and let's not let the discouragement get us down. I'm asked all the time, why do you waste your time going to Sacramento, Jim? I can only tell you this. The bigger mistake is if people like me didn't do it. The bigger mistake if we gave up. The bigger mistake is that I would bequeath for certainty the kind of nonsense to my kids and my grandkids that this state of California has shoved on Sharon and me. Sharon and I were born into the opportunity state that was California, married in the opportunity state that was California. Over the last 15 years or so, California has turned from the opportunity state, from the golden state, to increasingly the welfare state. It is an unsustainable pathway where our middle class is fleeing, getting out of the state because of high costs, where we are seeing our population, by the way, is flattening. And the only reason that we are losing, I think in the last decade, we lost something like 14 million people. Arizona got some of them. Texas got some of them. I'm the last Patterson in California. My grandpa came here in the 1890s in a covered wagon. We're the last ones. My brothers and my sisters and cousins and others are in Tennessee and in Texas and in Colorado. They didn't want to, but they left for opportunity. That's when California was the opportunity state. Increasingly, there's opportunity in a few corners of the state, but there's a growing other California that is just a few miles inland, and it's made up of millions of Californians that could very well have a very different day if the principles that we've been talking about, what we believe in, really became the law of the land again. Keep on keeping on. Support people like Jerry and others who are doing this across the radio spectrum and in other forms of mass communications. And then be on your knees in prayer for the pendulum to swing. And then when it starts to swing, cheer it on. And as you see it's continue to swing, thank the Lord that it's swinging in the right direction. And then just keep on pushing it to swing even farther. It can be done. History has demonstrated that it can happen. God bless you all, and thank you for the opportunity to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you for your kind words, Assemblyman. Thank you for the inspiration and the encouragement you give us. I mean, to hear a California politician talk as you have tonight is certainly comforting, encouraging, strengthening of our faith and resolve to continue in the fight. So thank you from all of us in the Lights On family. Thank you for being there for us. And be assured, sir, we are here for you. God bless you. God bless America. And I will see you in church.
Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedarabia Road, Santa Maria. Go to santamarialighthouse.org.